from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you trade for the Clippers, you're going to end up with the Clippers. That's what I have to say, because I'm here in New Orleans. But that's why it comes to my attention. Now, in the buried lead department, first something that's only interesting, and then something that's a little bit more. First, from the Washington Post, a story about the FCC trying to make TV stations fess up when they run things in their newscasts that aren't news. No, I don't mean that. I mean that are sponsored or paid for by outside interests. I know everything they run isn't news, but no, listen to this. So here's the lead. TV newscasts are increasingly seeded with corporate advertising masquerading as news, and the federal government wants to do something about it. Concerned that subtle pay-for-play marketing ploys are seeping into the news. It's only been there for decades. The FCC has proposed a regulation that would require the nation's TV stations, commercial ones, to disclose online the corporate interests behind the news. Right now, if they disclose it all, it's in, you know, in the credits at the end of the show. Because we all watch the credits, don't we? Come on now. The hardworking people. Anyway, way, put your miner's helmet down, because we're going way deep into the story. Comes this from our friends. This is about who's really looking out for you. Why, the National Association of Broadcasters, that's who. Paragraph 44,000 in the story says, the National Association of Broadcasters is concerned about, quote, the cost and manpower burden, unquote, that a new regulation could impose on stations. The trade association advocates instead forming a working group to study the issue. I wonder where the money would come from that. For that, maybe from people who buy video press releases on the new. Do you think? But now, a lead so buried and so lead-like, you just have to wonder, if you don't already know. The news, of course, awash with stuff about the two debates that the Republicans had in the last 14 hours. And who attacked whom and who was strong. Because that, ladies and gentlemen, is what in the TV news business is considered ratings bait. Almost on a par with a blonde in a sweater. Woman. But on one of the Sunday Yak shows that wasn't focusing on the Republican primary campaign. And don't you miss Herman Cain right about now. Be truthful. New Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, in what was advertised as his first Sunday morning interview in his new job. Because, of course, he's given 4 million Sunday morning TV interviews. But in his new job, you see, that's an exclusive. All right, then. Here's what he says. Look for it in your news. See how far you have to go to see it. He just slid it by me. I heard it, and I realized what he said, but it almost went right by. He's talking about Iran and the threat from Iran. Leon Panetta, Defense Secretary of the United States, here is what he said. Quote, are they trying to develop a nuclear weapon? No, unquote, the defense secretary. So that's the threat, ladies and gentlemen. They are not trying to develop a nuclear weapon. Can we allow that? This is your brain on the war on drugs. Middle-aged adults. See, I was going to try to remember this whole story. Maybe I should better just read it. Middle-aged adults whose memories have grown lazy can't blame occasional pot smoking or other light illicit drug use for their forgetfulness, according to a new British study. Experts continue to warn heavy, prolonged use could harm mental functions, because I guess they have to. The study carried out in the American Journal of Epidemiology tested the mental function and memory of nearly 9,000 Britons at age 50 and found that those who had used illegal drugs as recently as in their 40s did just as well or slightly better on the cognitive tests than peers who had never used drugs.
Yeah, man. It helps you remember, too.
Marijuana is by far the most common indulgence for the participants who are surveyed at age 42 about current or past drug use, then tested at age 50, with 6% saying they'd used it in the past year. Other drugs they were asked about included amphetamines, LSD, mushrooms, cocaine, and ecstasy, anywhere from 3 to 8% of study participants saying they'd ever used those drugs. Overall, at the population level, the results seem to suggest that past or even current illicit drug use is not necessarily associated with impaired cognitive functioning in early middle age, says lead researcher Alex Dregan of King's College London. So, that stuff we've been told all these years, if you haven't been using drugs, you can forget those. Hello, welcome to the show. The edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
End of the last couple weeks, actually, but you won't mind that. Dateline Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas House Speaker Mike O'Neill this week apologized for an email that made fun of First Lady Michelle Obama's hairstyle and mockingly called her Mrs. Yo Mama. The emails featured pictures comparing Mrs. Obama to the Grinch because of their similarly wind-blown hair. Sorry, just had to forward this latest holiday message, O'Neill reportedly wrote in the email he shared with fellow Republican lawmakers. I've had worse hair days, but this is pretty funny. According to the Lawrence Journal World, O'Neill forwarded it from his personal computer. The email, he said, I'm sure you'll join me in wishing Mrs. Yo Mama a wonderful long Christmas vacation in Hawaii at our expense, of course, unquote. A spokesman for O'Neill said the speaker didn't write the Yo Mama remark about the First Lady, and he said that he missed it in the text of the original email before passing it along. He represents a district that includes Hutchinson, for those of you who are fans of Kansas. O'Neill had defended the email earlier in the day before apologizing. So he's covered. Diana Abbott, the first black woman in the British Parliament, has apologized for a Twitter comment about whites' tendency to divide and rule. Abbott, the Labour Party's shadow health minister, made the apology after a telephone conversation with a party leader. She had made the remarks during a Twitter exchange with a freelance journalist who criticized coverage of the trial involving the 18-year-old killing of a English black man, Stephen Lawrence. Two people were convicted of that murder this week. The journalist said that she did not like the use of the term black community and said some black leaders are out of touch. And the black woman in the British Parliament, Diane Abbott, said white people love playing divide and rule. That's the comment she apologized for. But there's more Twitter apologies. Twitter itself apologized for incorrectly verifying a false account for Wendy Deng, the wife of News Nice Corporation chief executive Rupert Murdoch. The fake account with the handle at Wendy Deng popped up on Sunday night, soon after a real Twitter account was started by Rupert. Yes, you could follow Rupert. Just like his own private detectives follow you, if you're famous. Like Rupert's own the Twitter account, the Wendy account was initially verified by Twitter. But by early Tuesday, Twitter was forced to remove its verifying mark from the Wendy account after it said it confirmed the account did not belong to her. We apologize for the confusion this caused, Twitter said. Twitter said, actually said that. And they used less than 140 characters, so they win. A Dateline Taipei, a Taiwanese TV station, has apologized after one of its employees mimicked the emotional tone of a North Korean anchorwoman who made the grief-stricken announcement of the death of her country's leader, Kim Jong-il. A local sports talk radio show host in Albany, New York, apologized on the air this week for anti-gay remarks he made while discussing women's professional basketball. Bruce Jacobs of WTMM, the TMN, called two WNBA teams, the Los Angeles Lesbians and the Phoenix Dykery. During his broadcast, the teams are actually the Los Angeles Sparks and Phoenix Mercury. Quote, my comments yesterday were ridiculous, stupid, and amateurish, Jacobs said during a 10-minute apology. I apologize for even uttering the comments, whether you heard them or not, whether you were offended or not. And I apologize for talking like this. Deadline Brossard, Quebec, the last place Montreal Canadiens, apologized to those fans upset with the team for not hiring a coach who speaks French. The apology by general manager Pierre Gauthier comes 2 weeks after the appointment of coach Randy Cunnyworth touched off a language flap. Those are flaps they're good at in Montreal, I've noticed. The Canadiens market themselves as French Canada's team, and it's been 40 years since the team had a coach who couldn't speak French. I'm sorry if we upset people, because that certainly wasn't our intention, said Gauthier, a far cry from his defiant response last month when asked then about Cunnyworth's inability to communicate with French-speaking fans. Gauthier replied, languages can always be learned. Not in North America, they can't. Dateline Dallas, a Texas judge has vacated the conviction of a 56-year-old man who spent 31 years in prison for aggravated sexual assault. The ruling means Ricky Dale Wyatt of Dallas is free on his own recognizance while the Court of Appeals considers the case. Judge John Cruzo apologized to Wyatt, who was sentenced in 1981 to 99 years in prison. The Innocence Project asked that Wyatt's conviction be set aside because prosecutors withheld evidence that could have helped to acquit him. The evidence contradicted the victim's description of the attacker's appearance. Eyewitness, my witness, I say. But we're sorry. We're sorry about the 31 years you spent in prison. You know? What are you going to do? What are you going to do, Ricky? But wait, there's more. More apologies. Dateline Erie, Pennsylvania, Catholic prep school coach and guidance counselor has been suspended for 2 weeks without pay after sending an email to the student body that disparaged students who sat with girlfriends, parents, or friends at a basketball game rather than in the student cheering section. And also insulted two neighboring communities, other schools. Chet Moffitt's email following Cathedral Prep's loss December 13th says students who preferred to sit with their parents should, quote, cut the umbilical cord and grow a pair, and referred to students who sat with classmates as boy lovers. In response to students who chose to sit with their girlfriends, Moffitt wrote, if she made or wanted you to sit with her, then she is a high-maintenance, selfish pig, and you should dump her now. This is high school. Moffitt also made references to on these other schools as being mayonnaise sandwich-eating, sister-loving, trailer park-dwelling clowns. Cathedral Prep's president, the Reverend Scott Jabo, confirmed that Moffitt did send the email to the entire student body of the school. He said Moffitt's intention was to build school spirit. But unfortunately, he showed a lack of judgment. Jabo said Moffitt has since apologized and twice offered to resign his positions. No, officials of the school suspended Moffitt and will split his pay for the two-week period and send it to the other schools that he attacked. He was contrite, Jabo said of Moffitt. He took full responsibility, apologized to the student body, and he's in the process of apologizing to those other schools. The email, said Jabo, does not represent what PrEP stands for, nor does it define a man of PrEP. I said, well, you heard what I said. A British lawmaker has been fired from his job as a parliamentary aide after he was pictured attending a Nazi-themed bachelor party where one of the guests wore an SS uniform. He has apologized. Aren't we? You know, what's gonna go out of fashion first? Nazi-themed bachelor parties or tattoos for girls? NASCAR driver Casey Kahn has apologized for a series of tweets in which he reacted negatively to the sight of a woman publicly breastfeeding her child. It began when Kahn tweeted, "Just walking through a supermarket, see a mom breastfeeding little kid, took second look because I was obviously seeing things I wasn't." He went on, "One boob put away, one boob hanging. Hashtag nasty. And I don't feel like shopping anymore or eating." He also attacked some of his followers who criticized him. But now, in a statement on Facebook, he wrote, "I understand that my comments regarding breastfeeding posted on Twitter were offensive to some people. For that, I apologize. It was in no way my intention to offend any mother who chooses to breastfeed her child, or for that matter, anyone who supports breastfeeding children. I want to make that clear. I now have a better understanding of why my posts upset some of you. My comments were not directed at the mother's right to breastfeed. They were just a reaction to the location of that choice and the fashion in which it was executed on that occasion." Now, does that sound like a NASCAR driver wrote it or his lawyer? Just asking. Dateline Paris, France, one of France's best-known mail-order catalogs, apologized this week after Internet users noticed a naked man in the background of an advertising photo published on the children's section of the website. The photo of four young children with their arms around each other running on the beach while a naked man walked serenely through the sea behind them was removed from the site, but has since gone viral on the net. La Redoute has withdrawn the photo in question from its website. It has posted apologies on Facebook and Twitter, according to an unnamed spokeswoman. But wait, there's more. A South African newspaper has apologized after tweeting an inaccurate report. I think we had this. I didn't want to get rid of that. Okay, I eliminated something I wanted to read to you. That's my fault. Whose fault would it be? Minhee Cho ordered Papa John's pizza, but she got blatant racism instead. She tweeted to Papa John's after noticing something a little off about her name. "Hey, Papa John's, just FYI, my name isn't Lady Chinky Eyes." An employee at Papa John's had punched Min Chi's name into the computer as Lady Chinky Eyes. A flurry of retweets spurred over 30,000 views in just a couple of hours, spiraling the incident into a viral firestorm of fury. Papa John's tweeted a response 6 hours after her tweet, quote, "We are very sorry for this incident. Would like to contact you to apologize. Would you follow us so we can get contact info and direct message? And we're very upset by recent receipt issue in New York, and sincerely apologize to our customer. Franchise employee involved is being terminated." Lady Fired Eyes. Wouldn't have happened if Herman Cain had run Papa John's. Chicago's Cardinal Francis George apologized this week for remarks aired on Christmas Day comparing the Gay Pride Parade to the Ku Klux Klan. "I am truly sorry for the hurt my remarks have caused," George said, "particularly because we all have friends or family members who are gay and lesbian." Really? Rick Santorum does? "This has evidently wounded a great number of people. I have family members myself who are gay and lesbian, So it's part of our lives. So I'm sorry for the hurt." His initial comments came in response to questions about whether the new route assigned to next summer's Gay Pride Parade would interrupt morning services at Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church. That dispute was resolved before Christmas when parade organizers agreed to change the starting time of their event. A British bookstore chain has apologized after promoting Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf as the perfect present for Christmas. Waterstones book chain issued an apology after several people spotted the anti-Semitic tome at a store in West Yorkshire with a sales sticker saying the book is the perfect present and an essential gift for anyone seeking to understand one of history's most despicable figures. A shocking read and vital warning for future generations. Well, they got part of it right. D.C. Council member Henry Thomas Jr. has apologized for what he calls very serious mistakes and inadequate and flawed judgment. The remarks were in an emailed statement he issued announcing he was resigning effective immediately. He's charged with stealing more than $350,000 in government funds and filing false tax returns. Those would be the flawed judgments. Facebook apologized this week to a reproductive rights activist who posted detailed written instructions for a do-it-yourself abortion. The apology said the instructions were deleted by accident because they were mistakenly thought to be in violation of Facebook's statement of rights and responsibilities. Our policies are enforced by a team of reviewers in several offices across the globe, Facebook explained. This team looks at hundreds of thousands of reports every week, and as you might expect, occasionally we make a mistake and remove a piece of content we shouldn't have. It's pretty contrite, considering it's Facebook. The founder of the Circuit Factory Gym in Dubai made an egregious marketing gaffe when he posted a black and white photo of the train tracks to Auschwitz under the tagline, "Kiss Your Calories Goodbye," on the gym's Facebook page. The ad immediately elicited a slew of negative comments. Hours later, founder Phil Parkinson pulled the photo and apologized. He tweeted, "Apologize for the insane poster campaign that was put up this morning. The creative guy has been told where to go." Nazis, ladies and gentlemen. Third rail time. Dateline Toronto, a Canadian comedy writer, is in hot water, speaking of third rails, after using a racial slur in a blog post about hip-hop star Kanye West. Montreal's Seth Abramovich says he's been fired from Gawker Media, the company behind several popular blogs. "I now realize," he says, "you can never really justify using any version of the N-word, even in a joke," he said in his apology. He wrote a post early Thursday about a frantic series of tweets posted by West. The messages included West's announcement that he is launching a new think tank named Donda, D-O-N-D-A, after his late mother. In his post, Abramovich joked that Donda was an acronym that included the N-word. He since has apologized, saying the joke has offended many people. Blame Mark Furman. German President Wolf apologized this week for not being more forthcoming about a personal loan he took from a wealthy friend while serving as a state governor, but the president of Germany has no powers anyway. Disgraced Roman Catholic Bishop Raymond Leahy apologized for his actions before an Ottawa courtroom for the second day of his sentencing hearing on child pornography charges. The former head of the Diocese of Antigonish, Nova Scotia, pleaded guilty to possessing child pornography for the purposes of importation to Canada. Leahy! U.S. Representative Jim Sensenbrenner has written a formal apology to First Lady Michelle Obama for disparaging her appearance during a recent chat at a Hartford church. Quote, "I regret my inappropriate comment, and I sent a personal note to the First Lady apologizing." He had made reference to her big butt while talking to a group of church members at a Christmas bazaar. State Representative, this would be Marietta, probably Ohio. No state reference on this. Anyway, State Representative Judy Manning apologized this week for her comments this week about Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney's Mormon religion. "I have made a terrible mistake with my reckless words." The Marietta, that's why I think it's Ohio Republican, whose district runs into West Cobb and Kennesaw. Now I'm totally confused, wrote on her page. "Those reckless words appeared in Wednesday's paper in response to Romney's 8-vote victory in Iowa. I think Mitt Romney is a nice man," she wrote, "but I'm afraid of the Mormon faith. It's better than a Muslim." She apologized. I don't know if she apologized to the Muslims. This year's Black Friday was so overwhelming, even Best Buy couldn't handle its own sales. A number of online shoppers complained that some of their BestBuy.com orders placed in November or December were being canceled just days before Christmas. The electronics giant apologized for the cancellation. And those are the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is, of course, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, News of the Godly. A Los Angeles bishop stepped down from his duties with the Catholic Church this week after acknowledging he fathered two children. That's right, father was a daddy. Auxiliary Bishop Gabino Zavala, 60, you go, told the archdiocese that he was the father of two teenagers who live out of state with their mother. He filed his resignation under the code of canon law that allows bishops to apply for retirement before the age of 75 for medical purposes or for reasons making them unsuitable for their jobs. The Vatican has accepted his early resignation. And news, ladies and gentlemen, now of Nice Corp. I said news of Nice Corp. There we go. Rupert Murdoch's News International, Nice International, is thought to have prepared a legal fund of about $156 million to settle civil litigation actions. Did I mention this last week? I think I did. So, no news of Nice Corp this week, except that the hearings into news hacking, phone hacking, and computer hacking resume in Britain this week. I know. Who cares? Oh, I do.
I used to have a lot of luck, but all of it was bad. I lost my love, my way, my mind. Lost everything I'd had. I was just about to say that I had nothing left to lose. But I almost forgot about the blues. Heard a woman speak kind words, felt her touch, saw her smile. I thought that love had come my way, hoped that it would stay a while. And my heart and soul were happy till my head told them the news. And I almost forgot about the blues. Tried to run and hide away where trouble would not find me. Every time I turned around, blues was right behind me. Thought my luck was finally changing, thought my ship was coming in. I fantasized about fireflies, telling folks they knew me when. I got tangled up somewhere between the sweet talk and the blues. And I almost forgot about the blues. So the whiskey isn't working, and the well is running dry. It's too tragic just to laugh it off, too comical to cry. I'm just trying to find some peace of mind, wondering what I'll use. I almost forgot, I nearly forgot. Baba Blue.
from New Orleans, this is Le Show, and now... News of the Olympic Movement. Produced by Jim Ebersol, Jr. The 70,000 organizers, or sorry, 70,000 volunteers for this London Olympics this year have been told to disconnect from any Olympic discussion in their social networks, in stark contrast to the encouragement being given to the competitors to make 2012 the Twitter Games. Updated rules issued this week have laid down a number of rules for people to follow, leaving almost no room for them to make any genuine comment. There's been a huge push on the part of the London Organizing Committee to get their volunteer army in position. Without them, the games, of course, wouldn't even happen. They're being told what they can and can't talk about online during the Olympics. They can't talk about much. Three of the rules: don't disclose your location, don't get involved in detailed discussion about the Olympic Games online, but you can retweet or pass on official postings from the organizing committee. The organizers suffered a major embarrassment this week as they were forced to suspend their ticket resale process within hours of its launch because of technical problems with the website. The flawed system left hundreds, thousands of potential buyers and sellers of tickets angry and frustrated, and prompted the Olympic Organizing Committee to lay the blame squarely at the feet of their ticketing partner, Ticketmaster. Here's the most amazing part of this story, though. I'll get to that in a moment. The most serious problem was a failure in the, you should pardon the expression, back end of the system that prevented users from uploading their unwanted tickets. Without this process working, the resale principle was entirely undermined. Earlier this week, here we go, LOCOG, the organizing committee, admitted it had oversold 10,000 tickets for the synchronized swimming and was attempting to offer ticket holders alternative events. Speaking of which, men unable to get hold of tickets for the Olympic opening ceremony may still have a chance of being there in person. The organizing committee have urged men, especially those with rhythm, to help make up a shortfall of male applicants for volunteer performer roles in the opening and closing ceremonies. That's right, they're looking for British men with rhythm. You might want to wish them luck. The organizing committee say they have received plenty of applications from women, but need more men before the deadline on Monday, January 9th. Wow, that's tomorrow. Men with two left feet need not apply. LOCOG have stressed that they're particularly after men who are good at keeping in time and ideally those who can dance and drum simultaneously. You know British guys who can do that, don't you? Give him a buzz. We need more men, particularly if you have rhythm. Exclamation point. Men and women in the ceremonies will be directed by Danny Boyle, the man behind Trainspotting and Slumdog Millionaire. There will be music by Elgar and a performance by Sir Paul McCartney. Olympic VIPs will be given dedicated passport lanes at Heathrow Airport this summer. This plan to fast-track 25,000 athletes, coaches, and officials will mean delays for other flyers. So come visit London this summer. Queues at Terminal 4 for non-European Union arrivals already reach 2 hours at peak times. That's without the Olympics. Thousands of immigration staff will be transferred from their normal duties to deal with games arrivals. A spokesman for the airport, which is an official Olympic sponsor, says it would cope with the massive effort, but Heathrow bosses admitted that after the fiasco of the opening of Terminal 5, in which the new baggage system collapsed, this would be their greatest challenge. Officials and athletes who have not registered in advance will have to have their fingerprints and photographs taken by border staff when they arrive to enter the country. That won't take long. The information will be checked against immigration security watch lists of potential terrorists and criminals and stored on a database. This will cost about $3 million, including the charge for training 2,000 border agency staff to collect the data. Border agency policy documents seen by the Mail newspaper warned the process could cause, quote, huge delays. $80,000 Olympic officials and VIPs will be spared road traffic as they're chauffeured in luxury BMWs along 250 miles of reserved lanes in London to venues from hotels and airports. This has London cab drivers ticked off, and they may strike. On the other hand, they may not. Heathrow is expecting a record number of bags to be sent out of its airport on August 13th. Heathrow's busiest ever day, they say, about 218,000 bags. Many of them outsized sporting equipment. Heathrow is recruiting 1,000 local volunteers to greet the athletes, VIPs, and spectators. But they better not tweet. And commuters are being urged to walk to work or work from home during the games in a bid to stop London's transport system from grinding to a halt. The government aims to cut non-Olympic traffic by nearly a third. See, it's not just Americans who are crazily optimistic. News of the Olympic movement. It is a movement, and we all need one. Every day. By the way, please don't tweet about that segment of the show. I have to ask you not to listen if you can continue to violate that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of Afghan. The Afghan government, angry at being sidelined over rumored peace talks, the Taliban have opened an office in Qatar, to possibly engage in peace talks with Americans. Not with the Afghans. So the Afghan government flexed its muscles this week by ordering the takeover of a U.S. military prison, Bagram, the one we never talk about. President Hamid Karzai ordered the transfer of the prison at Bagram, sometimes called Afghanistan's Guantanamo, to Afghan control within a month, citing reports of human rights violations there. Those reports, of course, have been going on for years. Any peace process without Afghanistan's government in the lead is meaningless, said an Afghan official, requesting anonymity because he likes his head attached to his neck. But so far, the Afghan government has not been involved. The Afghan government also... We've been working for some time on the appropriate timing and pace for transfer of the detention facilities to Bagram. State Department spokeswoman said, we need to do this in a manner that is maximally responsible. Maximally responsible. Not just responsible. Maximally responsible. The detention facility was built within the sprawling U.S. base at Bagram, and it's gained a reputation for, quoting Agence France-Presse here, extrajudicial brutality. That's under American control. Imagine what happens when the Afghans get it. And, widely ignored by the politics-addled press, the government of Iran signed a bilateral defense agreement with Afghanistan late in December. As the deal was being finalized, Iranian foreign minister argued that foreign military bases in the region are the main cause of hostility and instability. I wonder who has those. He expressed confidence that Afghanistan's nascent security forces could secure the country without the help of the United States. But that's how it looks from here, how it looks from over there, next here on the show.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, envisioning the analog future. From the newly bunkered up presidential palace in downtown Kabul, where LASIK surgery is performed without benefit of lasers, I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Slick and Slack, the Stop It Brothers. Welcome to another edition of Karzai Talk. Today's show comes with the help of SmugCom, bringing illegal arms to the people, since we thought it was a good idea.
Oh, those were the good times.
Hey, who knew illegal arms smuggling could lead to corruption of the democratic process? But this show is happening during a very important time, my younger brother, as you well know.
That's right. We signed the mutual aid and friendship agreement with Iran. Mm-hmm. That brings the total of neighboring countries with which we've signed such agreements to, what is it now?
One.
Well, it's a start.
Oh, bad neighborhood.
How bad is the neighborhood, my older brother?
Oh, I'll tell you, oh, younger brother. Hmm? This neighborhood is so bad, the cockroaches have bodyguards.
It's so bad, Zagat has special ratings for best beggars.
That's true. It's so bad, the bandits have their own union. It's funny because it's true.
No, it's not funny because it's true. Ah. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, long-time insurgent, first-time caller.
Oh, welcome, my brother.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in from the cold, although God knows it's still freezing, even in here.
It's such a bad neighborhood, even the space heaters have frostbite.
Ignore him, caller. Go ahead.
Thank you. I've been active in the Taliban for about 4-5 years now.
No, I know. It's such a bad neighborhood. The calendars run slow.
Will you stop? Yes, caller. Go on.
Well, there have been up times and down times, as you can imagine.
Oh, of course. Nobody said an insurgency against a weak central government was going to be easy.
But in the last little while, I've been re-examining my situation.
No.
We've had a couple of kids. Mm. The insurgency really doesn't pay for decent kindergarten.
No.
So I'm wondering if you have a phone number for the Americans in Kunduz province. I'm supposed to be contacting them about, peace talks here.
You know something, caller?
What's that?
Kindergarten is overrated. I say homeschool them through the first 3 grades, then they're on their own. What do you think this is, Pittsburgh? Thanks for the call.
Wow, that was harsh.
Well, I mean, here we are. The leadership of the country is reachable as Michael Savage, and he thinks he has to do business with the Americans.
Well, my younger brother, this is just the phase. The Americans will be gone soon enough, and then he'll be begging to get back in touch with us.
Well, by then, maybe the Americans will have helped us pay for a call screener. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, long-time prison guard, first-time caller.
Oh, you're calling in on the Bagram line.
Yes, sir.
I know this because you're the first person ever to call in on the Bagram line.
Usually nobody's in the condition to call in on the Bagram line.
No, sir. I appreciate that. But as I say, I'm not a prisoner here. I'm part of what you might call the enhanced security apparatus.
Excellent. Well, we're looking forward for you to do whatever enhancing you might be doing when we take over the facility.
Oh, goodness knows, the need for enhancement never ends.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, sir. Well, that's why I was calling, just to get some guidance as to where, if your government was going to take control of Bagram, whether we'd have to change our methods of operation to where it might be to where we could no longer indulge in the same degree of enhancement, which could possibly lead to the enhancement of
enhancement itself. No, I know where you're going with this. Look, nobody's a bigger supporter and fan of enhancement than I am. You can ask any of my commanders.
Yes, sir.
We've enhanced quite a lot when it was called for.
Sometimes, even when it wasn't called for. Just, you know, ad hoc enhancement.
Or ad lib.
Probably ad hominem.
Or ad infinitum. But look, you're an American soldier. You're going home soon, am I right?
Well, actually, I'm a private contractor.
Oh,
so,
well, take a seat, my friend. The gravy train's just about to leave the station. There'll be an enhancement galore.
Oh, that's cool. And as far as my Humvee's concerned?
Just get the carburetor adjusted for the high altitude, and you'll be fine.
A little armor plating on the bottom wouldn't hurt either.
This is the least. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Well, in a time of change, it's good to have some sense of enhanced continuity.
And with those poetic words ringing in Mahmood's mouth, it's time to end this edition of Cars I Talk.
We had help today from Iran. It's not your father's Iran.
Legal services for Karzai Talk by the law firm of Ketchum & Newcomb. I'm Hamid Karzai.
And I'm Mahmoud Karzai. Join us next time for another edition of Karzai Talk.
This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap.
And we start, don't we, Addie?
Don't ask me. I just got here.
Yeah, you were a little late.
Well, I was in motion.
We start in Paris. France must invest billions of euros to improve the safety systems of its nuclear facilities so they can withstand the kind of extreme shocks that triggered in Fouque the worst nuclear accident in 25 years. That's according to the French nuclear watchdog ASN. French nuclear power operator EDF, yes, it's all three initials, what do you want from me, will need to install flood-proof diesel generators, what a good idea, and bunkered remote backup control rooms at all 19 plants across the country, or face having to shut down some of its 58 reactors, the ASN said. The EDF will also have to set up, before the end of 2012, an emergency nuclear task force to intervene on the site of an accident within less than 24 hours. That's a good idea. Two, we believe that facilities can only continue to operate if investments are made in the time frame we're saying. Otherwise, we may have to suspend some operations, said the ASN president. EDF says its planned costs over the next 30 years to prolong the lifespan of 19 nuclear power plants from 40 to 60 years would, as a result of the recommendations, reach the high end of the $40 to $60 billion range. The production cost of nuclear-generated electricity would rise as a result of the upgrades.
Still cheap.
Not as cheap, I guess. But then there's this from Japan. Japan says it will soon require atomic reactors to be shut down after 40 years of use to improve safety following the Fukushima crisis. Among other reactors at least 40 years old are those at the Tsuruga and Mihama plants in central Japan, which were built starting in 1970. Many more of the 54 reactors in Japan will reach the 40-year mark in the near future. Some were built only a few years ago. The government said this week it plans to introduce legislation in the coming months to require reactors to stop running after 40 years. Although the law may include loopholes to allow some old nuclear reactors to keep running if their safety is confirmed with tests. And after the Fukushima disaster, many people expected Japan's cutting-edge robotic technologies to come to the rescue. That turned out to be wishful thinking. The public was left wondering why Japanese robots such as Honda's Asimo humanoid weren't sent to the power plant to assist firefighters and workers trying to bring the crippled reactors under control. The reply that people received when they inquired about it said only that, quote, Asimo is still in development. Honda hopes it will be a major helper to people someday, maybe in dangerous situations like this. The first robots to enter the buildings and provide the first glimpses inside were American, as it turns out. The two PackBot robots, developed by iRobot Corporation of Massachusetts, used by the U.S. military, proved invaluable during early efforts to ascertain the full extent of the wreckage inside the units. One Japanese robot was eventually used at Fuke, a caterpillar-shaped rescue robot called Quince. According to experts, the biggest reason Japanese robots such as Asimo were not used early on was their vulnerability to high radiation levels. Well, there you go.
Well, what do you want?
I don't know. Better robots. Radiation-proof robots, which could damage their integrated circuits. The Japanese robot industry had, in fact, stopped working on ways to shield robots from extreme radiation around 10 years ago, before the Fuke crisis. Manufacturers and institutes were caught completely off guard, according to experts. Japanese robotic technologies focus on different stuff than ours. We have battle-hardened military robots, such as PAC-BOTS, which have been deployed countless times in battlefields in Iraq and Afghanistan. See? These wars pay off, and also used to detect radioactive compounds at sites too hazardous for humans to access.
As if.
Right. Most scientists, most domestic Japan companies have focused on developing humanoid robots that can assist people in need of nursing and other forms of care and improve their quality of life. Sorry. Domestic rescue robots, meanwhile, are mainly built to operate at sites of natural disasters or chemical and biological attacks. Some experts claim the Japanese government was previously unwilling to finance projects to develop robots that could be used during a nuclear accident, out of fear that such a move might imply that a nuclear disaster was possible and cause the public to question the safety of nuclear plants. You see, ladies and gentlemen. News of our friend the Atom, clean, cheap, safe to Newsy to Meter. Thank you, Addy, the Atom.
I didn't do anything.
I know. The unemployment rate went below 8.5, just maybe a tick below for the first time in a couple of years this week, enabling administration officials to proclaim once again that they had seen signs in the economy of glimmers of hope.
Got a little story for you. What's that? Pull up a chair. Children. Yeah. Empty storefronts filling up the malls. Foreclosure man's making lots more calls. You still got a job, but your paycheck's red. You can only get a loan if you're a bank. You can only
Simmons, lively as a couch full of David Swimmers. Turn up the dimmers, bask in the glimmers of hope. I'm talking to you, glimmers of hope. Yeah. Gets huger by the day. Can we ever really make it go away? There are bailouts for the rich, layoffs for the rest. You've got the stress, you must have failed the test. You've got the stress, you must have failed the test. But there are glimmers of hope, glimmers of hope. You so a way to deal when no way you can cope. It's no pool but two skimmers, school but no thrimmers, slicker than a lake full of Olympic swimmers. Turn up the dimmers and bask in those.
than your car. And I'm not making autos near where you are. A big night out is gonna be a dollar meal. It feels like no one knows the way you feel. It feels like no one knows the way you feel. But wait a minute, there are glimmers of hope. Glimmers of hope. A slope, more reasons to smile, less reasons to move. It's a vision that shimmers, business that simmers, lively as a couch full of daily trimmers. Turn up the dimmers and bask in those glimmers of hope.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, very quickly. Scientists are reporting discovery of an improved way to remove carbon dioxide, a major greenhouse gas that contributes to global warming, from smokestacks and other sources, including the atmosphere itself. The report on the process, which achieves some of the highest carbon dioxide removal capacity ever reported for real-world conditions where the air contains moisture, appears in the current issue of the Journal of the American Chemical Society. Colleagues explain that controlling emissions of carbon dioxide is one of the biggest challenges facing humanity in the 21st century. They point out the existing methods for removing carbon dioxide from smokestacks and other sources are energy intensive, don't work well, and have other drawbacks. They turn to solid materials based on polyethylenamine, a readily available and inexpensive polymeric material. Their tests showed that these inexpensive materials achieved some of the highest carbon dioxide removal rates ever reported for humid air under conditions that stymie other related materials. After capturing carbon dioxide, materials give it up easily so that the CO2 can be used, making other substances or permanently isolated from the environment. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. That's going to conclude this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, the mighty 104 in Berlin, the around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want, at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, around the world via the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin for your smartphone via Stitcher.com, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like me not talking over the vocal if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halston, and thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO. She can't walk anywhere without being recognized now for help with today's broadcast. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the 53,000 followers at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans. Chris Kamen, an all-star? Are you really?